go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Go the second program of the week of the 18th day of April, this being the 19th day of April. See that? Yeah, it gets confusing, doesn't it? Right, yes. This is the 19th day of April, 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. This, by God, is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Oh, yes, sweet mother of mercy, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Yes, 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 that's where we live. As noted, that's where you go if you would like to take part, if you would like to join the madcap merriment, the zaniness, the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the live chat room that takes place during the live hours of the program from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. Yeah, I'm heading in there now. Just any minute, I'll be able to tell you who's in there, if anyone. I mean, I know there'll be somebody in there, but... Barking! Yeah. Before I do that, let's get this noted. As I have previously announced, I'm supposed to be out of town next week. I've got a meeting that I have to attend in Atlanta. And we're trying to do 2 weeks' worth of fundraising in 1 week. So far, we are 0 for 400 bucks. Actually, we're not quite 0 for 400 bucks. Thank you very kindly to Dr. Allen for his subscription. Thank you very kindly indeed. But so the fundraising goal this evening is $790. I'm sorry. I wish it was otherwise. But if I go away, you know, if we have a 1 week fundraising hole, I'm going to come back to us, you know, basically not having a program. Because we exist from day to day and month to week and month to month here. Because George Soros just somehow... I thought I had the right address. Honest to God, I did. But no. So that's where we are. We had a $100 challenge on the table last night. And that went by the boards. So hopefully it will not be that way this evening. Because, well, we can't. We can't. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, there we go. And good evening to Anatole and Earther and Jugapunch and Will in Chicago in the chat room, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, Sparky being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space this lovely spring day in Northern California to become... Man cave. Yes. Yes. So jump right in. And I'm sure more will be wandering by. We'll say howdy when that time comes. If you want to help the program stay on the air, and, you know, 12 years, I mean, we've pretty good run, but if you want to help the program stay on the air, whether it be a $10 subscription, and we're still trying to reach the 100 level on that, ultimately the goal is to have 400, that's just a matter of checking a box over there at the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com, and, you know, your gift goes to keep all of this going. Just in case you're wondering, that's not the travel expenses for next week. That's not what this is about. That's covered. This is about keeping everything going, lights on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So just go through, get to the next screen, fill out the, you don't have to put the stuff in there about, you know, all the things you do, to get, no, just get to the next screen. That's where you do your PayPal, credit card, et cetera. Right. And hopefully, we will not close the program with a $790 fundraising hole. Hopefully we won't close the program with a fundraising hole at all. I know. It's a big number, isn't it? But, you know, it's a big number until you think about, you know, the crowdfunding campaigns for programs that don't even exist that raise, you know, over a tenth of $1 million. So there we go. Now, it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And, of course, Titanic Tuesday takes its name from something that happened many years ago now in the right-wing radio hellscape that is America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. Or was, I don't know. In which the morning blatherskate, the most soporific monotone one may ever hear in radio, it took a break from reading the newspaper to his right-wing, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing followers to take a call in which the caller said, "Steve, how come it is that you reckon they is seashell imprintationals in the rocks here in West Virginia down like by our coal seams? God bless coal. It keeps the lights on. How come you reckon them is there? We don't know where near's the beach." To which the monotone monarch responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yes. No word thus far on the movement of the Titanic samovar. No. And so it is that on these Tuesdays we celebrate. We celebrate what passes for intellect among the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, members of the toenail clipping toothpick society, you know, Republicans, Libertarians, Ayn Randians, that lot. The boogerati, if you will. Marty wants to know, did those Titanic plates ever hit an iceberg? Only if they were thrown at it. Right, you get it. So, by way of celebrating the right-wing intellect, well, let's see. How about we start in, where else? 3, 2, 1, Texas. Yes, of course. Where Chris Sevier, according to a report in the Midland Reporter Telegram, Chris Sevier is suing the district clerk of Harris County, Texas. He's also suing Texas Governor Greg Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton. That would be recently indicted Attorney General Ken Paxton. Yes. And he's suing over marriage equality. No. Chris Sevier is not a county clerk who's deeply held Christian conservative family values, traditional views are violated when a couple of guys pick out a China pattern or a couple of women start arguing over the right wall sconces. No. Chris Sevier, proud son of the Vanderbilt University Law School, and his name makes me wonder about his heritage. You know, the Sevier's were S-E-V-I-E-R. The Sevier's were a big deal in the founding of the state of Tennistan. A Sevier being the first governor thereof. It looks like the Sevier's may have wandered up into the shallow end of the gene pool. Uncle Daddy! No. Chris Sevier is filing suit. Hockey puck. 11 minutes past the hour. Hockey puck warning. Hockey puck warning. You will not be warned again, at least not during this story. Hockey puck warning. Get the duct tape. Hockey puck. Hockey puck. Okay, everybody try out the hockey puck. Okay, we're good. Chris Sevier is suing the Harris County District Clerk and Governor Greg Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton in Texas because he wants to marry his computer. Mm-hmm. Interviewed, and God only knows why, Chris Sevier, who describes himself as, quote, hardcore involved in the music industry, the Christian music industry, I might add. He's filed this lawsuit in two other states and plans to file it in at least 12 more, saying, this lawsuit is not a matter of who's on the right side of history. This is about who's on the right side of reality. Are we just delusional? I don't know, Chris. Are you using we because you think you're the Queen of England, or maybe because you're speaking for yourself and that mouse in your pocket? Because, you see, Chris Sevier, being a Christian, and, as we will later find out, being mad as a hatter, thinks that there's no difference between a man marrying a computer and a man marrying another man, or a woman marrying another, right. This is not sitting well with gay Texans, of whom there are millions. Matt Wolf is getting married to his partner later this year. He said, any argument against marriage equality that compares an adult in a consenting same-sex relationship to anything other than two normal, loving humans is just wrong. It's based in that person's fear, and at this point in history, I would say willful ignorance. Sevier has declared, as we've heard so often, apparently the preferred candidate of the Republican Party in the race for its presidential nomination, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. The Constitution is being hijacked, by gay people. Hijack the Constitution. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Chris Sevier wants to marry his
computer. But really.
And apparently Chris Sevier has a dysfunctional, I think is an appropriate term, a dysfunctional relationship with said computer. Because in the past, Chris Sevier has sued Apple Computer. Chris Sevier apparently prefers Apple Computers. Sort of. 3 years ago, representing himself, he sued Apple and, in terms of requested relief, asked Apple or asked the court to order Apple to make their computers such that when you boot them up for the first time, they all always come on in safe mode. In his 50-page complaint. Wow. I mean, 50-page complaint. Those are usually reserved for really, really complicated... Well, never mind. He wanted Apple to limit its boot ups to safe mode so that he would never have to see internet pornography. Now, to be fair, I don't exactly know what he meant by internet pornography insofar as he wants to marry a computer. The Apple website may well have been internet pornography. I mean, Jesus God, would you look at... Oh, my God. It's got a USB-C slot. Oh! Uh-huh. Sevier claims that mental illness he picked up as a result of our filthy, illegal, dirty, nasty... war in Iraq caused him to become mentally ill and then lose his law license in Tennessee. In his complaint, he said, Apple's product was not adequately equipped with safety features that would have otherwise blocked unwarranted intrusions of pornographic content that systematically poisoned his life. In his complaint, he refers to himself in the third person, singular. Yes. Arthur asking the obvious question, can't dude use a site blocker? Well, no, apparently the internet pornography just happens whenever, and you know, I got an Apple computer. Lots of Apple computers among the Horn Family Community Congregation. And I have yet, and I booted mine from fresh, and I never saw any porn. Have I been cheated? Did y'all get the porn and I didn't? But then again, it's Texas, and he's a good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered Christian, evangelical, probably gun fundamentalist, homosexual. So, you know, site blockers may be a violation of his deeply held religious beliefs. It may cause silent cyber abortions. Yeah, this guy's a dandy. Among other things, he's stalked John Rich of the once upon a time famous for a minute country act Big and Rich. And he's filed lawsuits against John Rich, and there have been restraining orders and a series of... Well, if you get an email from Chris Sevier, it kind of goes without saying it's going to be bizarre. And one of the emails he sent to John Rich had Chris Sevier at least half naked, wrapped in an American flag and covered in something that was apparently meant to resemble blood. And Jesus Christ, I hope it wasn't really blood. Wrong state, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa asking, is this feller by any chance one of the group that was blocked by ex-hamster last week? That was North Carolina. And that was, you know, all those good God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, evil, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, Bible-believing, who apparently spent an awful lot of time looking up things like sexy she-males, hot trannies, and oh Jesus, and those words are nasty anyway, but Merca. Do you ever see, hear stories like this and just ask yourself if this was what, you know, little James Madison, I mean, he wasn't bigger in a minute. I mean, he made Marco Rubio look like, you know, Wilt Chamberlain. Right. Madison had to be convinced, and basically the conviction was in the form of, listen, Jimmy, if we don't get a Bill of Rights, your little Constitution project is going to, well, it's going to flop. It's not going to get ratified. We got to have some language in there saying that religion can do whatever it wants to do, and that people can gun themselves up, and you know, the other eight amendments. Yeah, and little Jimmy Madison... consented, and that's how we got the Bill of Rights, and that's how you wind up with Chris Sevier, who, interestingly, has also sued our Kenyan Muslim usurper, President Barack Hussein Obama, as well as the A&E Network. That was a 91-page complaint in which he alleged a conspiracy between the Kenyan Muslim usurper, you know, president not sure, and A&E to fire Duck Doofus Phil Robertson. Ow. Ow. Make it stop. It hurts. It's stupid. It burns us. But, you know, one just last observation. Chris Sevier lives in Texas. What do you want to bet Chris Sevier has guns? Now, at this point, this is the portion of the program where we engage in rank speculation. But it's Texas. And all you got to do to buy a gun is check that little box that says, why, no, I'm not mentally ill. And as we know from the story coming out of Odessa, Missouri last week, the court case, the clerk will say, well, here, give me your money. And the mentally ill person gives him the money. And unless it happens to have come out of a, you know, Monopoly box, he then hands the weapon to the mentally ill person, who says, why, thank you, kind sir. I know just what I'm going to do with this. You're right. Jim says, love me do. I just know which port he can stick it. Full power for the ultimate thrill. Ooh, that was a good one. On a side note, our buddy Mark asks, hey, Bob, it's after 5 p.m. CNN hasn't called it for Hillary in New York yet? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I know. Meanwhile, and hopefully we can get a jump on this, our buddy Robert in Australia with a note. Robert says, I just sent $100 U.S. This cost me $132.93 Australian. That's the exchange rate for you. I'd like seven people to match it with $100 U.S. dollars each. Now, understand, I'm on a fixed income, Robert says. I'm trying to pay off some bills incurred for reasons beyond my control. Every penny counts, but if I can find $132.93 Australian to help keep the horn on the air, yeah, I can find that. That's all I can do for a while, so I hope it encourages others to chip in. And Robert, of course, has for a very long time been the author of the Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month Challenge. And so this is kind of a big deal. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very kindly. And hopefully, that other 700 will roll along. That arrived right after a note came in from Steve in New York, who was busy knocking on doors for Bernie in the Bronx last night, offering up a $10 challenge. So I would say, Steve, that has been met. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Arthur, for kicking in. Much obliged. We can maybe do this. It'd be awfully, awfully good if we did, because stuff needs catching up on. Because we never get out in front of much. So, that is, Texas. And who knows, over the course of the program, we may very well come back to Texas. Because it's Titanic Tuesday, and Texas has a claim on cases of Titanic intellect. Oh, yeah. But I mentioned the fact that there's every possibility in the world that this guy may have guns, even though, I don't know. There have been restraining orders, so maybe he doesn't. But you know what? This much I do know. When guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have flare guns. Today, according to Maine Department of Public Safety spokesperson Stephen McCausland, a 65-year-old man named Daniel Abbott of Portland, Maine, was driving his truck on I-295 in Freeport and pulled it over to the side of the road, the shoulder, and the truck was on fire. Now, this was a truck that had been modified to run on propane. Propane. So, that's a little bit more than your average car fire. According to that self-same Maine Department of Public Safety, the state troopers in Maine, 65-year-old Daniel Abbott had shot himself three times with his flare gun. That is a determined man. Because it's not like there's, maybe there are, but I've never heard of them. there aren't any semi-automatic flare guns out there. They're all single-shot affairs. Uh, 65-year-old Daniel Abbott is alive. He's being treated for burns at Maine Medical Center. He is in serious condition because at least one of the flares, he flare-gunned himself in the head. And the Maine Department of Public Safety speculates that he was trying to commit suicide. Spokesperson Stephen McCausland said the pickup had been modified to run on propane. As troopers say, if the fire had gotten out of control, the propane tank in the truck's bed would likely have exploded. But Jason Forgas and Paul Olston saw the burning truck, pulled over, and dragged 65-year-old Daniel Abbott out of it and got him to safety and got him to treatment. And Mr. Forgas used the fire extinguisher that he wisely carries in his vehicle. Everyone should, you know. Put out the fire. Because freedom. And it gets, you know, worse. Well, I mean, not for him. He's bad enough. And what do we call these segments where we just deal with a handful of firearms crap with which this country is forced to deal on, you know, a daily basis. Because Wayne LaPierre never would go out and get honest work. Sad stuff. A man is trying to cling to life in Maine. The clinging is all over in Alaskistan. So there's a gravel pit out in rural Alaska. And it's not a shooting range. For all I know, it's apparently they may be trespassing, but it's used as one. The gravel pit is in Sutton, Maine. And apparently constitutional protecting freedom lovers, bitter clinging, whatever that woman said. Bitter clinging, gunslinging, idea of what. But they congregate there, and apparently they do it morning, noon, and night. And they go there to shoot their shooting guns. And apparently it's real cool. So you want to make sure you got lots of pictures and photography and some videography. And that's what Adam Malaby was doing this past weekend. Of course, 8:30 p.m. in a place like Sutton, Alaska, I guess it's still broad daylight, isn't it? He was down there to the Sutton gravel pit, and he was looking to either photograph or videograph somebody shooting a .40 caliber pistol at a pile of rocks. It's a gravel pit, remember? And well, that's when he accidentally stepped into the space between bullet and target. Now, he's a veteran of the Army, understood firearms, but he wasn't shooting. He was picture taking. A man named James Myers lives near the gravel pit, and he said, "The ricochet bullets and the explosions you don't really get used to makes me nervous." Explosions? Yes, of course, explosions. Tannerite, remember? It makes me nervous every time. I figured it was only a matter of time with all that goes on up there. So many people shooting in so many indiscriminate directions without really any rules or guidelines. Well, you can't have rules or guidelines. Because there wouldn't be any
freedom! Wolverines!
No. So poor Adam Malaby got Wolverined. State troopers are... bold tales of the Alaska State Police. Police. They're investigating it as an accident. Oh, the gun just went off! No, mercifully, there's no statement in this article saying that the gun just went off. Dylan Barron used to go a freedom protecting at the gravel pits, but he's since quit. He said, "I've had cases where people have fired guns in my direction from behind me. There's usually never a firing line established, and other shooters fail to communicate with one another if they have to go downrange. This is where it gets dangerous. Add alcohol and ATV riders to the mix, and you can easily see how it's an accident waiting to happen." Wait a minute! Well, of course. I mean, guns and alcohol, you just go together like biscuits and gravy here in Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, in whom we trust. Amen. Yeah, meanwhile, the Alaska State Police have not confirmed that alcohol was involved in the Wolverining. Interestingly, though, people who have to live near the gravel pit have asked the local constabulary and the state police to pretty please do something to improve safety conditions. Because they also say that it's a meeting place for people who want to buy and, engage in the pure free market capitalism of the drug trade. James Myers, whom I mentioned earlier, said alcohol, drugs, there's people talking about hypodermic needles sitting out there. Some people are comparing it to the Wild West. You can just go out there and do what you want to do. And, of course, it is being investigated as an accident. No charges have been filed because, then we wouldn't have freedom in Merca. Thanks, NRA. Thanks, Wayne LaPierre. Adam Malaby was 30 years old. And he won't see 31. Huh. Because we've got to make sure that we keep a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy white people, paranoid white people. We've got to keep them happy, because otherwise they'll whine and throw temper tantrums and swear that somebody's getting ready to come and get them and take them to the FEMA re-education camps where where they'll have to do nothing but listen to Obama speeches until they don't love guns anymore. Yeah. And then this. Definitely this. Now, this comes out of Philadelphia. Oh, by the way, down in Shreveport, Jack writes, if you can take your gun into a bar, you ought to be able to bring your alcohol to the firing range. It's only fair. Well, absolutely. We've had a couple of stories lately of little ones dodging bullets. We had the little girl, little two-year-old, who just got a disfiguring flesh wound to her cheek when her mama dropped her purse while she was trying to buy something from the vending machine in the ER of a hospital in Jackson, Mississippi. She dropped her purse and the gun just went off and shot baby in the face, mercifully non-lethally. Then there was the story last night out of St. Louis, where Mama was standing up, a cleaning of her freedom protector, she said, when she was surprised by her little boy, whom she jumped and turned around and shot through the hand. That apparently ended the run of luck for toddlers in America. Up in Philadelphia, Maurice Phillips, who, like Adam Malaby in Alaska was, is 30 years old. Well, on Saturday afternoon past, it's a bad Saturday afternoon. It was Saturday when Adam Malaby died. It was Saturday when Mama plugged her little fella through the hand. And it was Saturday when 30-year-old James, Maurice Phillips was waving a gun around a small bedroom. In the small bedroom were apparently, according to ABC News, in the small bedroom were seven children. The children ranged in age from 7 months to 13 years. This took place in the Kensington neighborhood of Greater Philadelphia. And the best that the police can figure out is that 30-year-old Maurice Phillips came into the bedroom, pulled out his freedom protector from the holster he was carrying it in, and as the police state, carelessly and recklessly began waving and pointing the gun around the room. That's when, here we go again, the gun went off. We have been mercifully mercifully they didn't use the word just, but the gun went off. And Tahira Phillips, when the gun went off, the bullet that came out of the gun at least 2,000 feet per second, most likely, maybe 1,300 feet per second, possibly as slow as 980 feet per second. Well, the bullet that emerged from the muzzle of Maurice Phillips' gun went through the back of the head of 4-year-old Tahira Phillips. Yeah. Captain James Clark is with the Philadelphia Police Department Homicide Division. He said, we don't believe that he intended that to happen, but because of his grossly negligent acts, this is ultimately what happened. He's been charged with third-degree murder, involuntary manslaughter, child endangerment, and reckless endangerment. And then ABC News simply says, and related counts. It gets worse. The six remaining living children, ages 13 years down to 7 months, except for, well, the 4-year-old was out of the picture now. Well, after the gun went off, the other children got upset. I know. And they started making a lot of noise. That's when 30-year-old Maurice Phillips got off the bed and punched his 5-year-old daughter. The police used the term with a closed fist. And then wiped the blood that was on his hands onto the 5-year-old's shirt. Yeah, it was his goal, you see, to make the police think that the 5-year-old had killed the 4-year-old. Because, see, that happens all the time here in Merca. And what comes after that? So, according to the police, 30-year-old Maurice Phillips then called his fiancée, and once she got there, he changed clothes and took off. Later on, he turned himself into police. And after some questioning, he confessed that he accidentally shot little Tahira. According to Homicide Detective Clark, 5 of the 7 children that were in the Kensington bedroom were Phillips' biological offspring. I am inclined to hold off yet. Well, I don't know. Here, let's frame this in the form of a question, just like Jeopardy. Why do you reckon there were no charges for Mama in Jackson, Mississippi, when her freedom protector just went off and she just grazed and disfigured her daughter? or for Mama in St. Louis when she was standing up and was cleaning her Freedom Protector when she was surprised and turned around and plugged her two-year-old. And yet there were charges for 30-year-old Maurice Phillips for having accidentally shot and killed 4-year-old Tahira Phillips and tried to frame his 5-year-old daughter. Maybe the answer's right there. Maybe that's it. One, there's a death. Two, there's egregious conduct. Three, there's the lying, which is part of the egregious conduct. Yeah, it's probably it. Ron in Raleigh says, could you tell me if drugs or alcohol were involved, or was it just plain meanness? That part we don't know. We just, you know, don't know. But I think some just plain meanness probably was in the mix somewhere. But I think there's something else in the mix somewhere. But I'll leave that to you to sort out. Or maybe just tell me that, you know, I'm nuts. 8 minutes before the hour, and GK sent a note. GK said, in Minnesota, said, well, I just got my mortgage interest reduced by more than half in my refi, so I'm sending my $100 contribution in response to the cat down in Oz, that'd be Robert, who got the ball a-rolling. Checks in the mail, Bob, so warn boss man Wayne, I will. So that is one out of the $700 challenges in answer to Robert's challenge going out. And, you know, and anybody anywhere in between. Thank you, GK. Thank you very kindly. It's not all bad news, though. In fact, here's some good news. And I'm proud to say that it comes out of the court system that serves this state, almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, along with Maryland and North Carolina and the Old Dominion, the four states are served by the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. And they bounced a case today. They bounced it right back down to the trial court, the United States District Court for the for one of the districts in Virginia. Because in the Old Dominion, a student by the name of Gavin Grimm in Gloucester County, Virginia, has had the full weight and force of the local authority dropped on him over where Gavin Grimm goes potty. Mm-hmm. The local Department of Education, or the local school board, had said, no, 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 Gavin Grimm, we do not approve of how and where you eliminate waste from your body. Because, you see, Gavin Grimm was, when Gavin Grimm was born, they checked a box on Gavin Grimm's birth certificate that said female. Because that's what we do when babies are born. All we do is we look between their legs and, well, that's the end of the story there. Obviously, okay. But Gavin Grimm identifies as male. Gavin Grimm lives as male. Gavin Grimm behaves as male. And just happens, because of the way the legal system is structured in this country, happens to be, well, young, and therefore cannot get the necessary surgery to make the juncture between his legs look like what happens between his ears. And so there at the high school in Gloucester County, Virginia, they said, no, no, no. You got to go sit down to pee-pee in the girls' bathroom. And Gavin Grimm, and presumably Gavin Grimm's parents, sued. They sued under Title IX, the 1972 act that prohibits any discrimination based on gender by any school that receives federal money. And reviewing the dismissal of the Title IX claim, the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals today said, ha-ha, in remanding the case to the trial court, the 4th Circuit said that the district court had not accorded what they called proper deference to the Department of Education's regulations. Bunch of black-robed, unelected judges won't let us tell people where to pee-pee. Yeah. Now, let's do remember that the right-wingers are constantly having a hissy about penis people going into vagina people restrooms. Well, this is a vagina person wanting to use a penis person restroom. Where's the compelling state interest? Where's any state interest? Nowhere to be found. Well, Gavin Grimm could go in there and get all raped by all the boys. Well, then teach the boys not to be rapists. I know. I guess that's just overly simplistic, isn't it? Don't let the boys be, you know, rapists. I mean, that's just not possible. Fish gonna swim, birds gonna fly, boys gonna rape. Wait a minute, are we talking about Virginia or Afghanistan? Or is there a difference? No, I know. But it's still a victory. And that much of it, but it's not a guarantee. The court said, okay, we're giving more deference to the Department of Education's regulations. Gavin Grimm still can't go pee-pee where Gavin Grimm feels comfortable pee-peeing. Right, exactly, Carol Baker. When boys feel all rapey and shit, it's the Verganda haver's job not to be so damned available. And, you know, if Gavin Grimm, young man, was going to get raped in the boys' room by all the rapey boys, don't you think, I mean, Well, there's some sexual dynamics there that I just can't sort out. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm sure you do. So there's our Titanic Tuesday filibobster. Lord knows I'm nowhere near out of material. But this is certainly a start. If you would like to get involved in the conversation, you are most welcome so to do. You know how I trust. Area code 304-574-8178. That's line one. Then there's the stress line, named for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, who is gone but not forgotten. And that number is 304-663-4676. On your keypad, virtual or physical, that spells horn. H-O-R-N. 4676. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And you will lickety-split be involved in the conversation. If you've never tried that method before, then by all means, feel free to send me a contact request. Say, Horn Family or something like that, and zing! I'll approve it, and you'll be participating in the conversation, just like ever so many people do. All right, break time. Remember, there's a challenge out there. Robert started it with 100. GK followed it with 100. We're trying to raise $790 this evening, and we have. $486 of it so far. Thank you very, very kindly. All right, break time. Green News Report on the way, this being a Tuesday and all. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sunday's on.
It's Tuesday, April 19, 2016.
3 inches an hour?
That's right, and it's not going anywhere. We've got some reports of 20 inches of rain that's already fallen.
Another historic rain event, this time in Houston.
Well, let me tell you, Flint is not alone.
Secretary Clinton's big plan to eliminate lead contamination within 5 years.
On climate change, we must deliver on the promises that were made in Paris.
World Bank President warns the world must stop building new coal plants. Plus, stop me if this sounds familiar. March 2016 was the hottest March on record.
Stop. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And if you go to Glacier National Park, it's sort of Muddy Hillside National Park.
Well, then I won't go to Glacier National Park. Denial accomplished. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, here we go again. 20 inches of rain in some parts of Houston over the weekend?
Yeah, it was 20 inches of rain in some areas in less than 24 hours. That's really historic. That was overnight on Sunday, a slow-moving storm that caused flash floods that submerged highways and roads and homes and killed at least 5 people. More storm systems are on the way for the region. And now we know that studies confirm extreme deluges have increased in the United States since the 1950s, which scientists attribute to global warming.
But not elected officials, apparently, who live in Texas, who is being so affected by global warming. They lost 5 people, but, you know, let's just keep denying.
March 2016 was the hottest March on record. That's according to NASA. It broke the record for the hottest March set just last year, which broke the record set just the year before. Plus, the period from January to March 2016 crushed the global record for the warmest start of any year. And are you beginning to notice a trend here?
I am.
But wait, there's more. The past 11 months altogether in a row have been the hottest on record in 135 years of record keeping. 2016 is now on track to be the hottest year on record for the third year in a row, and that would be unprecedented.
And yet the deniers keep denying, and I guess the mainstream corporate media keeps allowing those deniers to continue denying.
In the wake of the Flint water crisis, Democratic presidential candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has proposed a goal of eliminating lead as a major public health threat in the United States within 5 years. At a speech at Reverend Al Sharpton's National Action Network conference late last week, Clinton called cleaning up lead in America an issue of environmental justice.
It is no coincidence that black children are twice as likely as white children to suffer from asthma, or that children of color are more likely than white kids to suffer lead poisoning, or that race is the single biggest factor determining whether you live near a toxic site.
However, Clinton's ambitious goal would require funding from Congress for new water infrastructure and cleaning up of toxic pollution, which, again, as we always say here, elections matter.
Yes, they do. And this Congress can't even fork over money to stop children from being poisoned. Man, do we have a broken system.
Which fruits and vegetables have the least amount of pesticide residue? Well, the Environmental Working Group has released its annual Dirty Dozen Produce and Pesticide Residue list to help you make decisions about organic versus conventional produce. Conventional strawberries now top the Dirty Dozen list for 2016, knocking apples off the number one spot. Nearly all strawberry samples, 98%, that were tested by federal officials, had detectable pesticide residue. At the World Bank spring meeting, World Bank President Jim Yong Kim warned that international efforts to cut fossil fuel emissions are actually being undermined by some countries that are still considering plans to build cheap, high-emission coal plants.
We're seeing countries around the world about to sign agreements for the dirtiest source of energy, which is coal. So we're working with countries right now to piece together deals that would make renewable energy cheaper, much cheaper in some instances than coal, and push forward the movement to mitigate the effects of climate change.
The World Bank, which provides loans to developing countries, announced a new focus on renewable energy projects and will devote a third of its investments to climate-related projects. Finally, some good news. Here in the U.S., a new report by the National Renewable Energy Lab shows that rooftop solar panels could provide nearly half of all U.S. electricity needs using technology available today. And the researchers said they calculated that using only the best, most suitable roofs. They excluded locations like parking lots, which would be suitable for solar canopies, and building facades. So they say the actual number could be much higher.
For much more on that story and all the other ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday for the 19th day of April 2016. This is the Horn. I'm Bob, and I love that last story they were talking about there, because I was thinking about that actually. It's kind of a, well, you know by now, right? It's kind of a crazy thing. We have a cat. And she's an adorable cat. She goes by a variety of names. Mocha, Mushu, Sugar Kitty, sometimes just Baby. She's a chocolate point Siamese. Although in learning about them, she might be considered a Thai cat, because she doesn't have quite the sharp features. But she's adorable. And she's not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. She was a rescue. And I think as a kitten she was abused. And probably I'm a bad person for not having done this, but she lives inside the house. She doesn't go outside. And there aren't any other cats. There is, you know, so she, we haven't had her fixed. And so she occasionally goes into season. And I didn't realize it, and this is, you know, this is a approaching an 80-year-old house. The 80 next year. And we all know that old saw about how curiosity killed the cat. Well, it didn't. But she's trying real hard. Because I was sitting back here a couple of nights ago, it was Sunday night, and I heard her distinctive meow. Her. I'm like, well, you're not in here. She's not allowed back here. Too many wires and stuff. And I thought I was going out of my mind, and I went outside and I used the flashlight on my phone, and she's standing on the studio roof. Because it turns out that one of the panels of the attic vent was blown out or something. You know, we've had some high winds. And somewhere in this house, she has found a way up into the attic and was standing out on the studio roof singing the song of her people. And she wasn't getting any takers. And there's enough distance between the edge of the roof to the ground that she apparently didn't feel real good about what might happen if she decided to test the old lands on all fours theory. And I think she was kind of distracted anyway, because she was kind of rolling around on the corrugation of the roofing and, right, like Song of Her People, right? And I, at one point in time, I was going to stand up on a cooler that has one of those handles that only the top of the hand, the U part of the handle that brings the two bars together, broken off. And I got up on top of there, and then I thought, and I said, "No, Bob, we're not going to do this because this has real potential to turn into a scene from Idiocracy." You know the scene. Fortunately, through the miracles of medical science, we were able to say, "Yeah, I'm gonna all of y'all." Let's not have any Wile E. Coyote moments, Bob. So Agnes advised me that to leave it be, and she'd come. And so we have since prevented that from happening. We've prevented her being able to get up into the attic anymore. But I stood there looking at the roof, and I realized that unless the roof is leaking, we really don't think about the roof anymore, very much, do we? But because I'm who I am, and I think the way I think, and probably because, I'm desperately in need of some level of medication, I stood there looking at my moonlit roof, thinking, you know, that's not just the roof. That's the future. And that's exactly what Brad and Desi were talking about there in the Green News Report. Because it is. At least half, and I saw the article, at least half of all the energy needs of this country could be supplied by presently available solar technology. And I suspect the other half is the half that we need to run vast industrial installations or to power homes that don't have available roof space. I mean, I've run the numbers here. I know what it would take. I know what it would take to take this place off the grid, and I would dearly love to. But it is something that's measured in tens of thousands of dollars. What it would take to take this house off the grid is actually more money than the house itself is worth. But regardless of that, the plain fact is that we can do this. If we want to get free of filthy fossil fuels, we can. It won't be easy. And because we have a Congress that is a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry, we won't. Even though it means the difference between the future life and death of the species on this planet, they won't. But it is not some sort of out there science fiction future. It's right now. The future is sitting vacant on all of our roofs. And I wonder how Miss Kitty would like to stand on a... I don't know. Do solar panels get warm? I don't know. They work in winter. They work in summer. You know, even under cloud cover, there's still solar radiation reaching the panels. Worth thinking about. I talked a little bit last week about the fact that, you know, it's not going to be all sunshine and unicorn farts But it can be done. It should be done. We should subsidize solar installation. The way we should encourage solar installation, the way we encourage people to grow victory gardens, and save scrap metal and so forth. During the Second World War. It can be done. We can do it. If we want to. It's that want-to part that is the burr under our saddle, from at least the standpoint. Did you hear the line about, putting solar in parking lots? I mean, wouldn't it be nice to have solarized parking lots where when you park your electric automobile and plug it up, you can actually walk from the store to and not get rained on, snowed on, sleeted on, hailed on, smog. Wouldn't that be nice? It seems like it would be to me. And see, that's the thing. Most homes can provide their own. Most standalone homes could provide their own electricity. And it's the distributed grid where we run into the centralized grid where we run into problems. This notion that we have and what about the profits of the poor little power company? Well, what about the profits of the buggy whip manufacturers? Yeah, there's an idea. Gerald says, hey, Bob, how about we subsidize solar like we do the oil industry? Right. Precisely. And there's another reason. I don't know if you find this as embarrassing and annoying and humiliating as I do. I suspect you may. But over the weekend, our partners in peace, the fucking Saudis, threatened to blackmail us. They didn't threaten. They did. They blackmailed us. The blackmail lies in the issuance of the threat. Oh. Bob, what happened to the cat? Well, the cat's not pregnant. She's not going to get pregnant. And Agnes was right, and she jumped back through the hole. We've plugged up the hole, and she's not going back outside again. And unless the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky wants to start a new cat religion, she won't be. So she's fine. I mean, she's not real happy. I mean, she's in heat, but, well, welcome to evolution. That's how it works. It's as natural as not being in heat. And in a couple of days, she'll be back to her delightful ditzy self. I mean, I told her she couldn't go in the room where she found the way up into the attic last night, and she looked at me and said, why? Siamese are noted for their chattiness. Cat's fine. Cat's happy. I adore her. It's irrational. Yeah, she's probably, what, 9 years old, maybe? And I can't help it. I just see her, you know, she'll just have to stop and talk to her, and she talks to me, and yeah. In the winter she snuggles up against Agnes, purrs at her. Giving her a belly rub is my job, because I'm willing to tolerate when she, you know, sort of really begins to enjoy it, and will dig her little front paws into me, and yeah. Siamese cats. So no, back to our partners in peace, the Saudis. Wait, did I think I said that wrong? The fucking Saudis. Gerald says the big question about the cat is, does she support Bernie or Hillary? I think she's very definitely feeling the burn, especially right now. She'd just prefer to feel the burn with the, and you know, Agnes tries to explain to her, you know, you really don't want what you think you want. You won't like it. But no, she, while her yowls can get pretty shrill, well, I'm not going to go there. This week, President Not Sure is going to go and visit our dear friends and partners in peace, the Saudis. They're having a meeting with the Gulf Cooperation Council. And it comes at a contentious time. Because, see, the people who lost their beloveds in the attacks of September 11th, 2001, still want to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about who helped make that happen. Now, I'm not talking about 9/11 truth. I'm not talking about George W. Bush with his little black coat and his little black coat and his little black hat planting little black bombs all over the World Trade Center. I'm talking about finding out how this actually happened. How a bunch of ne'er-do-wells came from Saudi Arabia with no apparent, not so much as apparently a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And managed to go to flight schools where they learned how to take off in planes but not land them, et cetera, et cetera. And there are 28 pages that remain secret. Former Senator Bob Graham continues to agitate about those 28 pages. And there is reason to believe, and by that I don't mean anything paranoid, there's reason to believe that there is more to the financing of 9/11 than we know or have been told. And there's a lawsuit. And hence the blackmail. Our dear friends and partners in peace, the Saudis. I'm sorry, the fucking Saudi Arabians. Have delivered an ultimatum to the Obama administration. Because you see, there's a bill in the Congress that would help to provide some relief to the still grieving families of the people who were killed by those 19 murderers, 16 of whom were Saudi nationals. At present, it is the legal precedent, or at present it's the law, that the Saudi Arabian government is immune from suit. No matter what they do to an American citizen, the Saudis can't be sued in a court of law. You know, that whole equal justice under law thing? Not if you're a Saudi. Not if you're selling something like 1 million barrels a day of fucking oil to the United States. What do you reckon it would do to the market for Saudi oil in the United States, and this is just a hypothetical, but what would happen to the market for Saudi oil in the United States if every roof was covered in solar panels? And if those solar panels, among other things, were really charging electric vehicles? Yes, 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 I know, that's unrealistic, that's pie in the sky. That's that dreamy Bernie Sanders stuff. That's not pragmatic progressivism. Okay, let's take that as read. But what if? Because the answer to the what if is that is what at least one aspect of real freedom looks, smells, touches, tastes, and feels like. And you know what? The Saudis know this. And yes, Randy, I know. A big load of Saudi oil goes to Europe. I'm not failing to acknowledge our reliance upon them. I'm saying I would like to be free of them so that we can tell them to fuck right the fuckity fuck off for fucking ever, fuckers. Because they run a brutal dictatorship. Their national economy is grounded, and their society is grounded in systems that are slavery in everything but name, and sometimes in name. They treat women in that country as chattel and not human beings. And yet we bow and kowtow and scrape to them as if they are our betters. Hell, they couldn't even maintain their death grip on power without our military connivance. This bill that's in the Senate, it was sponsored by John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, and Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York. Both Bernie Sanders and, she says, Hillary Clinton are supportive of the bill. Among other people, House Speaker Eddie Munster Ryan has said that he's not so sure. His check must have cleared. You know, the one from the First National Bank of Riyadh. Anybody? Okay, a quick little history quiz. Anybody? After September 11th, 2001, why did Osama bin Laden say that he and his organization, originally founded and funded by the American CIA, you know, Al-Qaeda, the base, why did they deem it why did they say that they deemed it necessary to attack the United States and kill innocent people? Why? You remember? Was it because they needed to establish establish the global caliphate and bring on the arrival of the return of the 12th Imam? Sorry, no. It was because we had our military personnel on sacred Saudi sand, which George W. Bush immediately removed, which apparently made Osama bin Laden happy. The Saudi tale, nothing good has ever come of our having involved ourselves, entangled ourselves in those in the politics and culture of that part of the world. I'm no isolationist, but I know assholes when I see them. And, well, if you go back, remember when Dim Leader during the Reign of Error walked hand in hand through the bluebells and kissed that royal, serene, noble, majestic Saudi high graciousness right on his mouth eater? Yeah, I do too. Remember when President Not Sure had some serene, majestic, royal, noble graciousness there to Camp David and sold them a whole bunch of bombs and planes and guns and bullets and things to, you know, use on Yemeni peasants. Yeah, in point of fact, according to the New York Times, in the first 6 years of the Obama administration, we, the people of the United States, trying to create that more perfect union, entered into agreements to transfer nearly $50 billion in weaponry to Saudi Arabia and said that we would be happy to provide them tens of billions more at a date to be named later. The Pentagon says that selling guns and not butter, because, you know, butter melts in the Saudi heat, selling guns to Saudi Arabia improves the security of an important partner, which has been and continues to be an important force for political stability and economic progress in the Middle East. Memo to the Pentagon. You don't get to talk about political stability of one of your alleged allies when said alleged ally creates that political stability by chopping people's heads off. So back to the bill that's in the Senate. Well, guess what? The Obama administration has made abundantly clear that it is wholeheartedly in opposition to this bill that would help provide relief to the still suffering families of September 11th, 2001. Mm-hmm. And by way of by way of sort of backing up President Obama, the Saudi Foreign Minister, Adel al-Jubeer, delivered a ransom demand, or a piece of blackmail, depending on how you look at it. The Saudis say that they, wielding their vast economic clout, they say that if this bill goes through, that they will sell off something on the order of $750 billion worth of T-bills, treasury bills. They're, in other words, they're threatening to try to collapse the American economy. Foreign Minister al-Jubeer made the threat last month. And what the New York Times refers to as several outside economists say that it would be very difficult for the Saudis to execute such a sell-off, and that they would cripple their own economy in so doing. But the threat is there. Well, hell, why didn't Foreign Minister Jubeer just say, hey, maybe we'll fly some more planes into some more of your buildings? Because what he did say is the economic equivalent of saying that. This is an ally? Mindy Kleinberg's husband died in the World Trade Center on September 11th. She backs the legislation. She said, it's stunning to think that our government would back the Saudis over its own citizens. Why is it stunning, ma'am? The George W. Bush administration did the same goddamn thing. With friends like these, and there is a way, there absolutely is a way to tell them to fuck off, and that is to push toward a renewable, sustainable energy society. Not in 50 years, not in 25 years, but in Apollo terms, in 10 years. And maybe that's the way forward. You'll notice I haven't suggested that we, to use Ted Cruz's language, find out if sand will glow in the dark. Oh, no, I haven't. I haven't suggested, as right-wingers do, that, you know what, we might finally get through to them that we're serious if we was just to drop a small-yield nuclear device right downtown smack dab in the middle of Mecca. Because that would be stupid and mean, hateful, and would inflame about a billion people on this planet against the United States. When in point of fact, the problem is the Saudis. I mean, there are other issues with other countries, but the Saudis are their own compartmentalized problem. Muslims around the world despise the Saudis. If, for instance, you are an Indonesian man or a Pakistani man, and you're desperate to feed your family, so you accept a job in Saudi Arabia that promises great wages. And the minute you get there, they say, please surrender your passport. And you live in what has been documented time and time again, whether it be that you're a construction worker or virtually any other part of the service economy of Saudi Arabia, you're a slave. And in that moment, you realize you may never see your beloveds again. And because you're an outsider, even though you're a Muslim, you're still an outsider, and you are subject to the arbitrary and capricious, and I would suggest sadistic whims of the Wahhabis, who keep the crown resting on the serene, majestic, noble, gracious Saudi royal heads through a systematic enforcement of religion-based brutality that is nothing if not barbaric. And so, lo and behold, here's the after the blackmail threat, here's the New York Times saying a prime example of what's wrong with unbridled American weapons transfers to the Saudi government is the Saudi-led war in Yemen. According to the United Nations, more than 3,200 civilians have been killed since Saudi bombing began last March. A majority of these deaths have been a result of airstrikes, many of which have been carried out with aircraft, bombs, and missiles supplied by the United States and Britain, including United States-supplied cluster bombs. The use of cluster bombs is of particular concern. These munitions are banned by an international treaty. Treaties? We don't need no stinking treaties. A treaty that neither the United States nor Saudi Arabia has signed. Why? Because cluster bombs are good business. And Calvin Coolidge was right. The business of America is business. In addition, we provide logistical support to the Royal Saudi Air Force for the airstrikes that it launches against its tiny Yemeni neighbor. In the middle of March, the Saudis bombed a Yemeni village called Mastaba. They did it twice. In so doing, they killed 97 civilians, and among those 97 civilians were 25 children. This was all documented by Human Rights Watch. They and Amnesty International have done an excellent job of documenting the murderous barbarity of our partners in peace. The Saudis are almost as good at slaughtering infants as the Israelis are. Again, with the partners in peace. Now, meanwhile, in regard to the legislation in the Senate, President Obama has said that that will put Americans abroad at risk. The hell does that mean? That Saudi death squads are going to come after us? See, there's this just keeps getting worse. There is no compelling argument to be made for continuing to cosset these miserable barbarians. Meanwhile, bless their hearts. I mean, there are little tiny, teeny, itsy bitsy attempts at bipartisanship in the Congress, and they kind of have to be. You can only find them. They're like four leaf clovers, and you just about have to use a scanning electron microscope to find them. But among other things, there's another bill in the Senate, again, bipartisanly sponsored. Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, and Rand Paul and that thing on his head, libertarian ophthalmologist, Republican from Kentucky. They've joined together. And their bill would ban air-to-ground munition sales to Saudi Arabia, at least until the Saudis stop murdering children in marketplaces. But see, in the backs of all of our minds, or at least those of us of a certain age, I suppose, is a memory. A memory of a time when this country was left to wallow in the miserable throes of withdrawal from its fossil fuel Jones. Known in common parlance as the Arab oil embargo. Back in the 1970s, in order to show us who really was boss, they stopped the flow of oil. And that's when we had gas lines, and even to a certain extent rationing. That's when little 10-year-old boys would stand in between, a little 10-year-old boy would stand between automobiles in a line at a convenience store in North Alabama. Holding a space for his father. Desperately trying to reach that place coming home from work. Because the news was spreading quickly that they had gasoline. I remember well. I didn't like them then, and I don't like them now. This has nothing to do with Arabic culture. This has nothing to do with the Arabic people. This has to do with one particularly noxious, vile, filthy, murderous, barbaric, thuggish royal family. Huh. Goddess of Irony's on the job. My stink bug is back. It's that time of year. I kid you not. When I said the word Saudis, I think he turned at me. He did. He turned and looked at me and dipped one antenna. Like recognizes like. Marty says, I remember the embargo. $1 a gallon of gas for the first time. Just imagine if it happens again. 5, 7, 10. Mm-hmm. You see, they've been playing nicey with us, the Saudis have lately, flooding the world market with oil in order to destroy the tar sands market. Gets very complicated. See, and I mean, any addiction behavior runs basically on this same model. Whether you're trying to score score a fix for your heroin Jones or your hydrocarbon Jones, sooner or later, nations and individuals find themselves behaving in a very similar manner. Yeah, the first one's free. And then, yeah. Oh, he's got some? Oh, good. Oh, wait, you jacked the price up? Well, I mean, I guess I gotta pay. The email's rolling in from Ron and Raleigh. Is pragmatic progressivism like compassionate conservatism? Earlier today, I caught the last of an article being read on the Stephanie Miller Show. Someone was pissing and moaning about Bernie's statements concerning fraud on Wall Street. The gist of the article was that everyone on Wall Street isn't corrupt. What happens to them if the banks are broken up? After all, the money made on Wall Street pays salaries and pays for kitchen remodelings and other shit. I believe if you break up the too-big-to-fail banks, there would be more goddamn jobs, just saying. It's probably true. And, of course, Wall Street is tied inexorably to what goes on among our majestic, noble graciousness. Ron continued and said, The goddamn Saudis are too chicken shit to fight anyone that can fight back. I can see it now. Saudi fighter pilots with a chest full of combat medals. Yeah, I got this. I got this one for that little girl that was holding a flower while her mother bought eggs. GK says, I'm sure those 28 pages are beyond damning evidence, to be sure. I, for one, would love for them to be released, but we all know that will never happen. Come on, Anonymous! Be nice, wouldn't it? Dogman from the chat room says, I think our defense contractors like the invoices they receive from the Saudis. Business is good. The turning human beings into dead human meat business is very good. Randy points out that everybody around the world basically despises the Saudi intelligence services. They're probably nastier than the Mossad. Probably. And a note coming in from our buddy Thomas, Jug of Punch, in the chat room. I had a tough decision, Bob. I spent time tonight to free up the money. The horn is needed. Coal River Mountain Watch and the 8 campaign are still funded. Thank you, Thomas. So Thomas answering Robert and Australia's challenge here at 2 minutes before the hour. Hour and 2 minutes remaining in the program. Robert in Australia got it started on this, the 19th of the month here, 20th of the month, up over down there. And he called for 7 people to match his $100. And we're getting there. Thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport for helping out. So we've got 3 and part of a 4th $100. Because, remember, we're trying to raise 2 weeks' worth of funds in one. Because I got to be gone next week. Sorry. Rerun hell. Yeah. Carol says, me too. I remember the embargo. Even numbered plates could get gas Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd number of plates Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And on Sunday, nobody could get gas. It is the Sabbath, after all. Right. They do live in a desert. And I'm just asking a question here. And I'm not trying to be mean or vindictive. Like I said, you haven't heard me hollering for anybody to get bombed out of this. I won't do that. Jack says, there was the oil embargo, so what did we do? Took the solar panels off the White House, didn't build more refineries, and now we're exporting crude oil. I'm pretty sure I've heard that we're striving to be energy independent. We sure seem to be doing a pragmatic, practical, get-things-done kind of a job at it. I think that last part from Jack was, sarcasm. Wow. Here's a fun little tidbit. Going back to the expat workers in Saudi, Brother Deacon Asa says, don't know if you knew this, but as an expat in Saudi Arabia, if you get into a car wreck with a local, it's automatically your fault. Nice, ain't it? And then what, Asa? They cut your head off? By way of, I guess, offering some comfort, Marty says, rerun hell? Just keep up with Nicole Sandler. Sorry, I can't help for a while. A periodontist has a claim on my money for a bit. I understand. And, hopefully we'll figure, we'll keep this going, and this will all work out, and we'll be okay. And maybe in the next 59 minutes, we'll crawl out of the hole. Thanks again, everybody. For keeping this little independent broadcast effort going. So let's take a quick break. I got real kudos for she came in through the bathroom window last hour. Inspired, I was told. In fact, Gerald said... congratulations, you have won the internet today with that bumper choice. It may be the best bumper choice of the year so far. That's high praise. So do we just want to have a three-hour filibobster for this Titanic Tuesday, or do you guys have anything to say? It's entirely up to you. The number's 304-574-8178. 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And email Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Twitter, @BobKincaid, Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Those are all various and sundry means of communicating with the program, including, of course, but not limited to, as you see, the chat room, where Devin is engaging in the conversation and has his Dog Man and Earther and Labor Man and Will in Chicago and Anatole. Oh, yeah, there's a lovely one, a lovely little news clip, courtesy of Lottie in the chat room. Dateline Los Angeles, arrested on suspicion of false imprisonment, sexual assault, and battery. A Saudi prince has also recently been accused of attacking at least three women and holding them captive for several days. Immediately upon posting bail, the prince reportedly emptied his $37 million mansion and fled the country on a private jet to avoid civil litigation and criminal charges. Classy people. Classy. All right, little break. And then we'll sort of reboot and restart. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oh, more it stays the same. And the hand just rearranges the players in the game. Oh, I had a dream. It seemed I stood alone. And the veil of all the years goes sinking from my eyes like a stone. By the English Parliament shall be fire and quake to London come in the year of 623. An emperor of the French shall rise who will be born near Italy. His rule cost his empire dear. Napoleon's name shall be. Divorce and from his throne cast down his teeth. One named Hester shall become captain of Greater Germany. No longer does this man observe, and bloody his rise and fall shall be.
distant land, the sun goes down on sands of endless deserts. See tomorrow run by hand in hand with yesterday, while once the time hung still forever. In the wink of an eye, the bells are drawn and shadows hurry away. And the world goes to reality today. See the light of the moon on the chin, you almost feel the ghost of Lawrence rocking by. As the sabers flash, the desert tribes come with the sun behind them. At the turn of the page, see the moving finger writing new words to say. And the world goes to reality. May bring you, just be careful how you choose your friends now. Every turn of the night of the wheel of fortune changes everything, don't lose your head now. Like a storm on the ocean, empires wax and wane and crumble away. And the world goes to reality today.
Minutes past the hour. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, the 19th of April, 2016. I'm Bob Kincaid. And yeah, we got a special thing going on this week. We're trying to raise 2 weeks' worth of funds in one. And we've actually knocked down 1 day's worth of fundraising. And we've got $400 to go to meet Robert in Australia's call for a 7-to-1 match of his $100 starting contribution this evening. And but if you, you know, 5, 10, 20, 25, what it doesn't, it all adds up. And it's all a matter of being able to pay bills before the end of the month, because I'm not going to be here at the end of the month to pay bills. So there's that. The stress line has somebody on it. The other line does not, and nor does the Skype line. The Skype line and line one are pretty much the same thing, so one or the other. But let's run down to Louisiana Stan, which is perilously close to Houston, Texas Stan, where it has rained like a sumbitch. Did you get the rain too, Jim? Just a minute. Oh, wait. Nope, wrong button. Damn it. Sorry. Did you get the rain too, Jim?
No, man. It's still a clear sky. There's a little clouds, but it's not us. I know Houston. What did I hear? Got like 21 inches in a day?
Yeah, 20 inches in 24 hours. I mean, if one was a religious fellow, one might think that the eternal almighty bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky was mad at you. Wonder what Houston's done. Oh wait.
Well, he wasn't really mad at all. Houston was those five people he killed. You know, because he made sure those people got killed. He put them in the.
Oh,
right
that's
place.
Right. That's right. Because he will in fact flood hundreds of square miles just to get at five people that he's got a hard on for.
Yeah, man.
But then again, aren't there a lot of refineries and chemical companies and stuff down along the Gulf Coast in Houston?
But that comes into play because he's just testing those money makers safe, and also see and of course all that damage and stuff is just going to be a write off, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean. I'm just wondering if there's a possibility, if the bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky is actually real and isn't a bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, but is in fact the manifest group consciousness of the entirety of the planet and the solar system and the universe and everything, if maybe that deity might be just a little bit fucking pissed with how... we're abusing the planet and therefore sends, 20 inches of rain in 24 hours on top of one of the places that's contributing a shitload to climate change.
Yeah, but when you look at the universe, this whole planet ain't shit to a tree to the whole universe. I mean.
Oh, no. We're not an individual molecule. Amino acid molecule on a genome, on a chromosome, on a set in a cell, on the tip end of an armpit hair of the universe. No, we're not. But still, think about it holistically, Jim. Think about it from a Buddhist standpoint. There you are with your big human primate brain, and you got two arms and two legs. But you know what? If your asshole hurts, it will ruin the day for the rest of your body.
Yeah, but that's
us.
The asshole of the universe. I don't think it's that big a deal.
You're gonna argue this metaphor with me, aren't you, Jim?
Yeah, I get off on philosophical metaphors. I guess it's
okay. So we're one hemorrhoid in. We're a cell in a hemorrhoid in the asshole of the universe. And that cell can make you miserable.
Yeah, but we might be that one cell that doesn't mind all this crap going on, you know?
Well, if we're just one cell, we don't have the mindfulness to even know what we're doing. And if you look at the climate change deniers and the Republicans and the birthers and the deathers and the ninthers and the tenthers and the birchers and the booger eaters and the members of the toenail clipping toothpick club, you know what? Yeah, we are.
Okay, I guess.
Wait a minute. Is there a new thing developing here on the horn? Do I hear a bird in the background there?
Well, I'm kind of outside on the back porch and there's some birds.
Cool. Cool. Well, maybe Scott in San Diego has started something with Punky.
Oh, yeah. There's some birds.
In fact, we had I saw a story the other day. Some foresters from the West Virginia Division of Forestry and some folks from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting and a couple of locals had met in the woods down in Lincoln County to decide how best to argue that the cerulean warbler, which is endangered, should not be on the endangered species list.
How it shouldn't be on an endangered
species? How it should not be. Yeah, I know. You had the same response I did.
Yeah, man. This is, you know.
And it's a cute little bird. It really is. It's cerulean blue.
No, I'm going to use a Christian quote. Even you know how much I despise Christianity. What did Jesus say? What you do to the least of them, you do to me.
Least of these, my brothers, and wasn't Saint Francis kind of partial to the Boyds?
I think.
Yeah, a real friend of bird and beetle type.
I guess. I mean, the only way I know.
Although we don't know which bird and which beetle, it might be like Roger McGuinn and Ringo Starr, for all we know. I'm sorry, just had to.
That was a good one. Yeah, I liked it. No, it just kind of boggles my mind. It's like, there's so much stuff you see on the internet and stuff. And what's the group? Truth Out? Not Truth Out. What's the other one? I think you mentioned them earlier. It's the whole bunch of the ones with the face mask.
Anonymous?
Anonymous, yeah. I mean, they have some powerful stuff on there, man.
Well, I wish they'd... I mean, and I'm not being critical and I'm not being mean, but I wish they'd hurry up and release Hillary's transcripts so she doesn't have to.
Yeah.
And while we're at it, could we pretty please maybe just sort of... could Anonymous, could you release those 28 pages, that the American people aren't allowed to see?
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird. There's so much information. I'm not just talking about Anonymous, but just on the Twitter, there's not enough hours in the day to read everything you'd like to read, at least not for me, or even much less, it's just not. And that, that's including "quote unquote" good stuff too, or whatever else there is. But I mean, there's only 24 hours in a day, 86,400 seconds. You got to sleep sometimes. You got to eat sometimes. You got to go to work. It's kind of perplexing, I guess. I guess you got to choose one thing and just focus on it. Like you chose radio and you're doing one hell of a job.
Well, bless your heart. Bless your heart.
You become like a Zen master of the filibuster, and you're kind of like what's his name, David Carradine.
I've done some preliminary design work. I can't draw my way out of a wet paper bag, Jim. But when we have the humongous crowdfunding campaign to redesign and rebuild the studio, one of my broadcast locations is going to be a place where I can just sit in the lotus position and say om, for a while.
Yeah.
When I did that, I had my thumb and my middle fingers touching. Om.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the Buddhism, it was more the chanting gig when I was in the Buddhism scene decades ago.
Oh, you weren't a humming Buddhist, you were a chanting Buddhist?
The Nam Myoho Renge Kyo.
Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes.
Yeah, the translation sounded pretty cool. It was like devotion to the mystic law of cause and effect through harmonious vibrations. It's everything is a vibration in my voice, the sight, even what you see is vibrations and everything, even what you feel.
Well, until we started turning everything digital.
Yeah, well, even then, it's still vibrating.
It still has to be retranslated into the analog system of the ear.
Right, right.
Unless you're Rush Limbaugh with a cochlear implant. My friends!
Or Rush Limbaugh after a nice Oxycontin buzz.
Yeah, the refreshing burst of flavor.
Like a table of a certain wood is divided, from what I understand, of physics, and it's not a whole lot, but... Like, they have hard woods and soft woods, but certain woods, basically, let's say pine, is vibrating at a certain those atoms and molecules are vibrating at a certain level for it to be wood, that kind of wood.
Oh, no, it doesn't. You don't have to run down that rabbit hole very deep at all, Jim, before you figure out that, it probably is all illusion. I mean, if you, then there's wonderful books out there, the Dancing Wu Li Masters and Zen and the Art of Physics or whatever. And all of that stuff that, I'm atoms, you're atoms, and we all have this spatial limitation where we perceive each other as solids when we're 60-some-odd% water.
Right. Or as the Rolling Stones say, one of the lines of one of the songs, everything's starting to flow.
That too.
And the weird thing is, I mean, you think, well, why? There must be good and evil in the universe because there are some evil SOBs, but they're on both sides. I mean, it's just like the Saudis, but then it's like, quote unquote, our team, the Americans. And I want to root for Obama, and he does some good things, a lot more than any Republicans.
And then he turns around and tells the victims of 9/11, the 9/11 victim families to, shut up.
Yeah, and then it's just like, I told you last week when I talked to you. I mean, it's like, since I'm in Louisiana, Stan will probably be for the next 6 or 7 months or whatever by his next election. I'm voting Green Party, being like, you being my political advisor.
Don't lay that rap on me, man. No, dude.
It doesn't matter. I've been shattered all over Louisiana, Shadooby.
Shadooby. Absolutely,
yeah,
Shadooby.
Rolling Stones line. Little Rolling Stones. It doesn't matter because Louisiana's going red.
Going red? It's like going underwater.
Well, probably sooner than we think. Maybe, hopefully, I will not be living here and be dead.
Yeah, I mean, won't it be nice when New Orleans culture gets reconstituted in Little Rock?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some culture wars. But, I guess maybe if they can all agree upon the right version of Jesus, everything will be cool. Because Jesus is a way of bringing you together, except when the ultimate goal of Jesus is basically power, and you got to decide on a leader. And you got to. Now, always seems to be another person that wants the power that other person has. You ever notice that?
Funny how it works out that way.
Yeah, funny. You think like if there was a bearded delinquent, juvenile delinquent in the sky, you kind of have things more orderly, but somehow. I guess the funny thing is, if he knows everything, he already knows it's going to happen, and then there is no free will. I mean, it's like watching him, you can watch the same movie over and over again, but it gets kind of old. You think he might open up a free will thing or something.
Oh, you and your silly free will.
Free will vacuum, or which Star Trek term? Did anybody use a Star Trek reference?
No. You're the first of the evening. Yeah, by the way, Devin just noted from the chat room, Obama says, go away. I'm baiting. Yeah, so we got that.
What's the thing they used to... beam them up, transporter, a free will transporter where you could transfer free will throughout the universe. How about that?
The whole thing would probably just collapse in on itself.
Yeah, from all the joyous exuberance.
Yeah, believe you me, you do not want the universe powered by free will Baptists.
I don't want anything powered by any Baptist.
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. We have a winner. Well, I hope you and the birds out there are having a lovely little evening in Louisiana, Stan. So, I mean, it's been kind of warm here. Is it already warming up down there, Jim?
Oh, yeah. It's like getting up into the upper 70s. It's It still gets into the 50s at night, but it's so far so good. I mean, you know, garden's looking fine. Got a couple of tomato plants and
nice.
Got some GMO free, supposedly. What do they call it? I planted those a year or two ago. Not grapes. What were they? Oh, blueberries. But the thing is, when you buy blueberry plants, they take a long time to grow, so I don't know if we've seen that many blueberries. I'll probably be back in Vegas when that happens, but we'll see.
Yeah, but right.
The Vegas dream continues.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Jim, have yourself a good evening, my buddy.
All right, you too.
All right, just be good. Keep them honest down there. Later. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana, standing. Lo, is it possible that that's our buddy Todd?
Hey, man, what's going on?
We know.
Listen, this Saudi, I think the timing is a little bit weird because the Republicans in the Northeast are, you know, they're highly upset. This is when they get hyper-nationalized, right? Right after 9/11.
Right.
This could be the last. This could be what really disintegrates that party. You know, they're going into two factions: the Whigs and whatever the normal Republicans. I think if you understand what I'm saying, I might not be using the right terms, but do you know what I mean?
I'm getting there. I'm working with you.
Yeah, you know, like the Republicans who want to govern, as opposed to Republicans who just want to tear down government, right? And the ones who want to tear down government are the ones who really are hyper defense. They want to, you know, everything about the defense. But see, this Saudi thing with the 9/11, this is really going to fracture, I think, the Republican Party. Because this is, they've been doing this for years. It's been coming, you know. What's your take on that?
Well, we've let the Saudis shove us around like a bunch of little punks for eons, and the sad thing is, I don't know if it's sad or not, Todd, but that's a message that we could reach out to the right wingers with and get them on board real quick. Hey, never mind climate change. Fuck a bunch of climate change. Climate change isn't real. It's a great big giant fraud. But hey, wouldn't it be nice to tell the Saudis to, go chini themselves? I mean, we could tell the Saudis to go fuck themselves, and then they can fuck off, and then they can fuck way off, and then they can come back just to fuck off some more.
Well, it's a good time. Elon Musk is building a huge factory out west, you know, to make batteries for homes so that you can store your power overnight at a lower rate. You know, have you heard about this? Have you seen this? It's
yeah.
Huge. Yeah. So.
But still, Todd, this is the kind of thing that has to happen on an Apollo scale, okay? This happens has to be a determination that we are going to stick solar panels everywhere solar panels can be stuck. Do it before TPP goes through, maybe we can do it with American-made solar panels. And provide a huge boost to the industry, and that would provide employment, and employment at good wages manufacturing and installing solar panels would be a good thing too. But we can't. But we don't have the time now to sit around and say, you know, we'll get it done by the year 2121.
Right. Well, that's, you know, see, that's the thing. We the people have power, but the corporate sector, the people who control the utilities, they have to be coerced into it. And like you're saying, you know, most of them are Republican, most of them, probably all of them. But this is a perfect way, maybe, you know, use the the nationalism symbol. You know, it's the right thing to do anyway. It's the right thing to do to get them on board, you know. So, it would only be a hiccup to them because they could diversify their portfolio. You know, they could start making cheap electronics. That's what everybody likes. We like gadgets. Right, if power was cheaper, people would buy more gadgets.
Well, and then there's something else here. I've got a clip here that you might enjoy. Are you old enough to remember the late great Sam Kinison?
Oh, absolutely.
Jack in Shreveport sent this to me a few minutes ago, and really, I think we don't fully comprehend. We don't comprehend the real power that we have in this situation. Just because it's fun, let's take a second, shall we?
Great.
This is sand. Yeah. It's sand. You know it's going to be 100 years from now, huh? It's going to be sand! You live in a fucking desert!
Point taken. And,
well,
I mean, because, you know, we kind of could look at him and say, you know, eat your sand. Eat your sand and drink your oil. But we can only do that if we're free of the miserable sons of bitches.
Well, look, I'm all about not having mono economy. I mean, look what it did to West Virginia. But this is the time. We need to build roads. And I think building solar panels and windmills and tide generators,
Yeah.
I think that's what you call them. Okay.
Hey, with the rising sea levels, I think the tidal wave action energy collection probably would be real big.
Got to be.
But I got to shift gears on you, Todd, because I kind of conjured you. Although you may not have heard the beginning of the program, you're a Philly guy,
right?
So tell me about the Kensington, if you know what the Kensington neighborhood of Philly.
Oh man, okay, real quick, Kensington is where you do not want to live. You might have seen Nightline. Remember Nightline?
Yeah.
Okay. Ted Koppel walked through Kensington way back in the 80s because of the heroin epidemic. Philly had the highest purity of heroin for years. I mean, probably still does. Because Baltimore is right there, New York is right there, and the Delaware Bay. Well, for whatever reason, there's always been a really strong heroin. And that's the epicenter of heroin on the East Coast, really. Okay, it's called a Badland. So Kensington, and just this past weekend, I was just reading the paper. There's a bunch of gun deaths. You know, it always is. It's as bad as you read about it. There's needles everywhere. I mean, it's unbelievable. You would not believe.
Did you happen to read about the shooting on Saturday?
Absolutely. You mean with the his name? Yeah. So he blamed it on the okay.
Yeah. Gentleman. Yeah. That was in Kensington, and yep. I'm just asking the question here because a lot of times when the gun just goes off, what you get at the bottom of the newspaper account is an investigation is ongoing, and generally you get an investigation is ongoing when the guy who Wolverined somebody accidentally or the gun just went off or whatever is a white guy. Are we pretty sure that the guy who got third-degree murder and about a dozen other charges thrown at him by the Philadelphia Police Department, are we pretty sure that's a black guy?
Well, he's not Caucasian, I don't think. There's only Caucasians who still live in Kensington are the ones who didn't leave during white flight. But in other words, Kensington actually back in the day, way back in the day, that was where Baldwin Locomotives, I think that's the name of it, Baldwin. Anyway, a lot of everything was made in Philadelphia. That's where the factories were in that area. So when the factories shut down, you know, the drugs came in. And it's mostly Hispanic people there. It's mostly Hispanic and poor whites, a few blacks. I actually lived in that neighborhood for 1 year with a woman. Only because she wanted to live there because, you know, she's West Indian. And, you know, a lot of West Indians prefer to be around Spanish-speaking people or, you know, whatever. That's a whole different thing. So, I mean, intimately, I kept telling her, do not buy a house here. Why do you want to buy a house here? She's like, I want a single house. This is what I can afford. I'm like, you don't want to live there. You really don't. So, of course, right after I left, you know, she got broken into. But, yeah, the neighborhood, yes. Matter of fact, they had another follow-up article.
And then dude tried to drop the dime on the five-year-old.
This is the follow-up article. He actually did that. They didn't say this yesterday. This came out today. He smeared blood on the girl, the other daughter's forehead, to make it look like she did the shooting, because that was his original story. Then he ran off somewhere and was holed up in a house with a shotgun, I guess, because, you know, of what happened, what he did. But, you know, that neighborhood is just it's just pathology on pathology. It's really okay.
I'm sorry, this reveals a little bit of my own prejudices, Todd. But when I read that it happened in a bedroom where there were seven children in the bedroom.
Okay, this neighborhood, like I said, this is where the original like Industrial Revolution house, you know, like these tiny row houses, they call Trinity houses. They're really narrow, and there's three stories in the basement. And some of them are like narrow, like maybe 4 yards wide, right? So they're a bunch of little tiny rooms, and people will cut them up and rent them out. I mean, this neighborhood is so jacked, it's so fucked up. Look, I'm going to be playing. This shit is so fucked up where the cops only come in there to arrest people. They don't even want to be in there. They don't even want to come. They only come after the fact. They're not trying to get hurt. They want to go home. They don't fuck around over there. You know, they go and they do the rounds and then they get the hell out. This place is lawless. I'm just telling you. This is like open air drugs 24/7 and prostitution and, you know, any type of pathology you can imagine is happening.
Okay, so the other story I had at the beginning of the program was the guy who got wolverined up in Alaska at a gravel pit where people go to just like free fire plink with their freedom protectors, and the locals say that there's also a lot of booze and needles left laying around. But that's white people. And that story ended with the shooting was deemed accidental and remains under investigation.
See, I have a feeling that street that they happened on in Philly, right? He was an outlier in that neighborhood. I could tell by his last name. Okay? Everybody knew him. So there's something more. It's more going to come out about this story. Because I was surprised he didn't have a Hispanic last name.
Well, I mean, the fiance comes home, and then he changes clothes and bolts. Because he calls her and says, come home, I just shot our baby.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah, there are gaps in the coverage, but I mean they've thrown the book at him, and I'm not saying that it should. I am not saying that it should not have been thrown at him. Okay. There's as you say, pathologies upon pathologies at work. You know, in this case by itself. But how is it that he gets the book thrown at him, and yet a guy who blows away a 30-year-old dude at a place where there's needles and shit laying on the ground and people are liquored up and shooting their shooting guns and everything. How is it that everybody walks on that?
Because rural white America that's expected. It's not a big deal. That's why.
And yet the people who live around that gravel pit have been calling the cops saying, yo, please won't you do something about this? I mean, there are explosions out there. There's gunfire constantly out there. I mean, we live here. Come on, please.
That sounds terrible. That sounds awful. No, I'm serious. I see these people, man. I can hear them. They're across the street from me. I hear them. They have big, you know, you can buy machine guns and stuff. You can buy any kind of weapon you want here. If you know somebody with an FFL, right, you can buy literally a machine gun. And I hear these big caliber, like I hear 50 caliber shit across the street. I mean, across the highway from me. That's how loud it is. I mean, it's like, boom. You know, These people are ready to. That's what I'm saying. Where is some fractured? Just some fractured shit going on right now. This is groundbreaking. And since you brought it up, I don't know if you've seen Chris Matthews lately, but is he going to work till he expires?
No TV here, but you know. Our boy Tim Russert, you know, he went at it until he didn't.
Well, the reason I say that about Chris is that I really feel like his faculties are becoming compromised, like he's got a little bit of dementia or Alzheimer's going on.
Well, yeah, so proof. I happened to see a clip. Carol Baker directed my attention to it. I happened to see a clip of Christopher Hitchens, different Christopher Hitchens moments in which he was sort of deconstructing Hillary over the years. And part of that was involved Tweety, Chris Matthews, basically taking the same side as Christopher Hitchens and sort of engaging in the critique of and agreeing with his critique of Hillary Clinton. Fast forward to now, and suddenly Chris Matthews, he's got that tingle down his leg again, and this time it's for Hillary.
It's so obvious. It's a shame.
And, yeah. and you know, Arthur just said, I don't like Christopher Hitchens. There was a lot not to love in Christopher Hitchens, but the thing is, some of the stuff that he was saying relative to Hillary Clinton, it weren't exactly controversial. I mean, the whole business about her being pinned down by gunfire in Bosnia, yeah, please.
You know something. I really get the bad feeling. Well, it's not. I don't know. I don't even know what to think anymore. But I'm going to focus on Hillary right now. It appears to me that the longer she presents herself on the stage, she is self-destructing. The longer she talks, the more she opens her mouth, she's just going to sink herself. She's making. And I finally saw the whole debate, the last debate. I didn't have time. I had to watch it on YouTube. Bernie, I'm not going to use a boxing analogy. Bernie bloodied her up. She's bloodied up bad. She's fucked up. He busted her lip, eyes all fucked up, hanging by the occlusion nerve.
She hears the bell and runs to the corner, and she's saying, "Cut me, cut me."
I mean, he's ready for out. Bernie's getting something, man. I think his wife, well, they're having a good time or something. He looks younger. He's getting it. He's got with the program, you know.
And yet, what, a day or so ago in the for-profit media, there was an article saying, "Well, you know, this is the end for Bernie. It's all over now, baby blue."
See, Bob, that's exactly why I didn't rush. When I missed the debate, I said, "You know what? I'm going to listen to what these people say first before I watch it. Just you know." So I can tell. And when I watched it, I was like, oh, my God, this, hands down, he beat her. What are you talking about? He left her speak. And she did that look when he said, look, we need to distance ourselves from Israel. I'm paraphrasing, but when he talked about Israel, her neck went back, and she had that look like, no, you didn't. Oh, my God. He was like, you can't say that. We're running for American press. What the fuck? Her neck. Snapped back like she was in a damn car wreck with whiplash. I'm serious.
Well, did you catch that moment when Bernie was getting the standing O, and people were just cheering uncontrollably for him, and she just gave that withering look of, you know, if only my eyes were laser beams out at the audience.
Yes, yeah, she looked like a reptile. Yeah. Oh, good look. That look, man, that was like a laser cutting through titanium.
I mean, it was hot.
That woman, man. You know, I'm just saying, she's just like. Well, I'm not going to talk about the other guy tonight because he gets enough press. But I thought about what you said about about the religious zealot, and it is scary. And you know what? There's a lot of Americans just dumb enough to vote for him. You know? But I will say this. I think that they're pulling something out of the hat. Like I said before, I think there's a Venn diagram going on. And, like, Trump, he likes to make deals. He wants to make some money. And it just coincides with the fact that somebody wanted him to wreck the party. And he was okay with that because he needs the money and he needs exposure. So he's getting paid and he's getting his name out there. He doesn't care. At the end of the day, he's still going to be selling shit, right, or trying to sell stuff. See, so it doesn't matter to him. So he has fulfilled his goal and more.
Well, let's take a moment. You know, with the New York primary upon us, and it's going on even as we speak.
I haven't looked.
And there have been complaints of a lot of irregularities, people removed from voter rolls, that kind of thing. Our good buddy Dr. John disabused me of some of my concerns. But, you know, the other day I had the clip of, yesterday, I guess, of John Kasich campaigning in, it was Friday. John Kasich campaigning in New York and going for the Orthodox Jewish vote. At which point he explained to them that the blood of the lamb that was placed on the lamp posts, no shit, in Egypt was the blood of Jesus, and that had to go over real well.
Wait a minute, he doesn't know when to shut the fuck up, does he?
Gotcha. I gotcha. Yes, I did. No, he doesn't. No, that was.
I mean, that's just basic shit, man. You don't know shit about Jews. Just shut the fuck up.
So, well, but no, there's a point. That's just background. That's just background, Todd. Because now we got this. The Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz anointed future booger eating king of America, or booger eating future whatever. They ran ads directed toward the ultra orthodox Hasidic community in New York City with this statement. Okay, and they were running them, and they ran them in Yiddish, even.
Oh.
And, you know, no funny voices here. Presidential, and if this doesn't give you the cold chills and make you understand that this man is a goddamn theocrat, this guy's a fucking Ayatollah, nothing will. Presidential candidate Ted Cruz is the first and only since President Reagan who believes that God is the one who decides who will be elected president of the U.S., which is why he is confident that he will be elected.
I can't process that. You didn't say what I thought you said.
I did. I mean, there's a it's months now. Maybe it's a year now. I'm referring to him as Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, because all those fucking weirdos stood around him and poured some Wesson on him and Florence Henderson came in and sang the Wessonality song around him, and they anointed him, and they said to be the future king of America.
No, everybody should be troubled about that. That's some fucked up shit. Fuck that.
And now he's saying that God, he's confident he will be elected president because God say so.
Oh no, fuck that. No,
if you don't turn around and run as far and fast as you can go to get away from that shit. Then, you know, we really can. If that man was to become president of the United States, turn out the lights, hang it up, it's over, ain't got to go home, just got to go somewhere else. But meanwhile, and this is here's fun, flyers were distributed on Bernie's behalf in Hebrew, in Yiddish, I guess. But they were aimed at the group of what are they called? The Satmar, Satmar. And in the past, they've tended toward supporting Democratic candidates because they are actually anti-Zionists.
Oh.
And that ad said...
So am I. Does that mean I'm a smart mark?
I don't... So, you know how you said that, you know, Hillary's neck snapped back?
Yeah.
Well, here's what the flyer says. Some self-interested Haredi figures have attacked the Democratic candidate for president, Bernie Sanders, calling on the Jewish public not to vote for him. The real reason for their opposition is because Sanders refuses to bow down to radical right-wing Zionists and because he does not agree with the radical policies of Netanyahu. May the name of the wicked rot.
Oh, please. These people have lost their damn minds.
No. This is a group that thinks that this is directed toward these are people who think that Benjamin Netanyahu is a dangerous fascist Zionist, and they're Jewish. They're ultra super duper double plus wow Orthodox.
I misunderstood you. If they're talking about Benny, yeah.
Yeah, they're saying that Bernie's been criticized. That Bernie's been criticized, but they're pointing out that the real
reason... Wait a minute, with his fake-ass accent. You know he's from Cheltenham. That's right over the line from Philly. He went to high school in Cheltenham. This fucking accent he has is a bunch of bullshit. So fuck him.
Who's?
Netanyahu.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. But what's interesting is the use of a Hebrew curse. May the name of the wicked rot. That's used in connection to Netanyahu.
The name of the wicked. Now, who is
the wicked in that context is Netanyahu.
Okay, well,
I mean that's man.
We're back. In
I mean, if a Christian American politician said something like that. The Anti-Defamation League would be on him like a duck on a June bug. But that's how it goes. Hey, Todd, got to get out of here, buddy.
Take care, Bob.
All right, good to hear from you, man. Take it easy. Later.
Take care.
Bye. Okay. And so it is that we come to the end of this here Titanic Tuesday. That was a wonderful conversation with Todd and before that with Jim. Thanks, guys, both of you. We will close out. We needed to raise $790 this evening. We raised it one. So we'll be pretty close to the same number tomorrow evening. But you know, we made progress, and thank you so much. Thank you so much to Robert in Australia for getting us started. And hopefully in the overnight hours, more people will hear this and jump in. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs. And thank you very kindly to, thank you very, very much to Jack. Thank you to Earther. Just want to make sure that I get everybody. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Jug of Punch. One and all, and thank you overnight for your subscription, Dr. Allen. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully, we'll get this knocked down over the course of the week. Oh my goodness, prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Cool. Thanks everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks to our all volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Off to Malloy Land. Later.